Michael Colgan is the director of the Gate Theatre in Dublin, Ireland. He's also the co-producer of Beckett on Film, an ambitious project which saw Samuel Beckett's 19 stage plays adapted into film. Colgan told Steve Paulson about the biggest challenge of turning these stage productions into films.
Well, the biggest challenge of all is undoubtedly the fact that you're working with 19 directors who are, if not demigods, gods. And, you know, the better the director is, the less obedient he or she is. So, you know, you're really looking for some sort of obedience, obedience to the text, obedience to the spirit of what the author wanted. And yet you're hiring a director who are, I suppose, successful for being disobedient, you know, for being rebellious, for even though they might write something perfectly themselves, if it doesn't fit with the whole kit and caboodle, they'll cut it out, you know, if they will cut out their own scene to make sense or to bring it down to 90 minutes or to tell the story better.
So were all these films faithful to the original
plays?
All
of them were faithful, but I had to go, don't forget, I'm talking to directors and I'm saying to a director, hey, you know, when you film it and you shoot it and it is shot, you cannot solve this in the editing room. And that is something that none of those directors had ever had to live with before. They can shoot left, right, and center, take a two-shot, a wide shot, they get a cover shot, and then they can say, well, I can make that decision in the editing room. And in fact, if the scene doesn't work and the actor isn't acting very well or it's not telling the story or is a confusion, they can cut the scene. They can't do that with Beckett. So the only way to do that, and as opposed to trusting people, which would be a mistake, the only way to do it was to try to get directors who themselves worshipped at the shrine or who themselves were writers who had a simpatico with a writer wanting something done a particular way. So I went to Neil Jordan, who started out as a playwright. I went to Conor McPherson. I went to David Mamet. I went to Tom Stoppard, I went to Harold Pinter. So I was sort of dealing with writers at first, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. And to some degree, all of these people were, I suppose you could say, protégés of Samuel Beckett.
Or else they were, if they weren't sons of, they were cousins or stepchildren. You know, I mean, we have often said that without Beckett, you wouldn't have had Pinter. You'd have had Pinter, but a different Pinter.
Mm-hmm.
And without Pinter, you may not have had Mamet. And then without Mamet, you might not have had Tarantino. And God knows the list goes on. I'm not saying he's the father of all modernism, but I think that a great deal of the 20th century writers were influenced by Beckett.
Now, Beckett was famous for being very particular about how his plays were to be staged. I mean, he specified the rhythms and tones that actors should use, as well as lots of technical information about sets and lighting. And I know the joke was always that he was supposedly just the playwright and there was a director, but in fact, he was the director behind the scenes. And did you try to be faithful to that information when you were putting these plays onto film?
Well, it's a very interesting, you know, what I discovered. There are two dynamics. When you're an audience looking at a film, either in a cinema or in your front room on television, and when you are sharing something in a theater, there are two different dynamics taking place. And so if you want to be faithful to the effect that the author has, you necessarily have to change the method of presentation. If you're sitting in a theater and the author has said that there's a blackout, well, in a packed theater, or not packed, that blackout becomes a pause. The lights go down. We all sit very still. Funnily enough, when the actors are speaking, you can get people coughing. But when you take out the lights, you bring up the ante a little bit. You heighten it. And the lights have come down, and people don't cough, I find, from running a theater. If you do the same thing on film, and you go to blackout, and it just goes black, and you stay black for 5 seconds or 10 seconds, as the author asks, well, there's a different convention. You know, the film is broken, is what people think. If they're in their front room, it's not a pregnant pause. It's not actually something that heightens the moment. People get up and go to put on the kettle or make some coffee. So you have a different thing happening. If, for example, we do Crap's Last Tape in a theater, Beckett asks for it to be in a void. And as you probably know, the play is essentially, one of the themes of the play is black and white. the room with the light. He walks in and out of darkness, the black ball, the little white dog, Bianca, Kedar Street is the Hebrew word for black, Bianca, the nurse with the white thing and the black funereal pram. So all these black and white images are going through, and he wants it in a void underneath the light. Now, of course, in a theater, when you come in to see that play, with a table and a chair and a tape recorder in a void, there is nobody saying, where's all his furniture? Every member of that audience accepts and indeed adds in his room in their own mind's eye in some way. They don't have to build shelves or do anything, but they know he's sitting in a room. If you do that on film, he's not sitting in a room, he's sitting in a void. And you look at crap and he has one table and one chair and you say, hey, the furniture removal people have come. They've taken his furniture away. So whereas if I'm doing the play as I've done on stage, I do it in a void. But if I have to do it on film, I have to create some room, some set. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
So there are two different things here. I think both of them are faithful. So within that sort of example, I think that that's where I could use the power of theater when I'm doing the play and use the benefit and the strength of film when making a film.
We've mentioned Beckett's shortest play, Breath, which doesn't even run a minute long. You chose the artist, Damien Hirst, to direct the film. Why did you choose him?
But to be brutally honest, I wish I did have that great idea, but I had a partner in all of this called Alan Maloney, and it was Alan's idea, who is a friend of Damien Hirst. I suppose I chose it was my idea to go for a designer, and Alan decided to go for Damien. Well, I'd done this play, I say in inverted commas, which is 45 seconds long, three times. I think I must be the only producer to have done Breath three times. As I say, I did it in 91 and then in New York, 96, and in London. And I realized that you don't really need a director to direct this. It's a heap of rubbish on stage. And then there's a breath, and then there's 45 seconds, the lights come up, and then there's another breath. And I suppose it's just, you know, it's a joke, not a terrifically funny joke about, you know, you're born and then there's rubbish in your life and then you die and you inhale your first breath and then in between it all is a heap of rubbish and then you exhale it. And the great thing about that, I think the first time it was ever done in Dublin, and we did it when we did the first festival, and there was a great whoop of laughter, and it was more or less the entire audience at the gate were saying, good on you, Sam, or nice work if you can get away with it, you know? And there was great bonhomie and sort of happiness about it, and it was fun. But essentially, it was about the design. I remember Damien Hirst, there was a lighting cameraman, and there was a designer, there was people. There was 17 people sitting around the studio when we were planning this. And he said, why are all these people here? He said, all we're doing is an ad, you know? It's only 45 seconds. And so it was like an ad. There you go.
Which of the films that you have put together in this whole series, Beckett on Film, which do you think are most successful in capturing Samuel Beckett's worldview?
I'm very fond of, and it's the most difficult play, is Ohio Impromptu, because I think Jeremy, there's something very, very moving.
Jeremy Irons.
Jeremy Irons doing that, directed by Charles Sturges. There's something about that I regard, if I'm not going to sound too pretentious, but that actual piece, and if people get it on the DVD, it's really the nearest thing to a CD that I just sometimes play it just to hear the cadences of his voice.
Little is left to tell. One night, little is left to tell. One night, as he sat trembling, head in hands, from head to foot, a man appeared to him and said, I've been sent by, and here he named the dear name, to comfort you. Then, drawing a worn volume from the pocket of his long black coat, he sat and read till dawn, then disappeared without a word. Sometime later, he appeared again at the same hour with the same volume, and this time, without preamble, sat and read it through again, the long night through, then disappeared without a word.
How would you describe that play?
Well, I think it's a play about loss. And a lot of his plays are about that, the sort of the remorse of loss, of something that has gone, and a love lost. And it has been described as being an ordinary lover. It can be described as the hat and the Latin Quarter. They're a reference to people thinking that it is a reader and a listener and someone talking to themselves, and maybe it is dealing with the loss of Joyce.
Do you think Beckett on film serves as a good introduction to Beckett, or should people really see the plays on stage first?
Well, you know, the point of it is, of course, I think you should see the plays on stage first. But if there is somebody in the United States and who goes to a public library, and I'd love public libraries to have them, and he takes out, you know, takes down Krapp's last tape, the same way that I went into the 1937 reading room in Trinity and took down Murphy and read The Sun Shone Having No Alternative and thought, this is my man, I can relate to this guy, this guy is funny. If we can get people who can get the DVD off their parent's shelf and put it on one day and get turned on to it, well, then that'd be great. And if that person turns out to be an interpreter or an actor who gives something back, well, then it'll all have been worth it, you know. Because I think that necessarily it's like Beckett said, you know, ever tried, ever failed, no matter, try again, fail better. We have all failed, and every production is ultimately, is necessarily a failure. It can never be perfect. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that Beckett, because he is the most careful, and I believe he is the writer of the greatest integrity, and to me, the greatest writer of the century, of the last century, and I think will be the giant of this century. He deserves Julianne Moore and Neil Jordan and Atta McGoyan. He deserves to be working with Pinter and Mamet and people like that. He deserves those interpreters, as well as students and as well as people starting out, you know. So I think that the DVDs, hopefully, will bring people, new theatre practitioners, young people, as well as talented people who might go in there and there might be more productions.
Michael Colgan is the co-producer of Beckett on Film,